Hey, we just wanted to give you a heads up before you listen to this next program, because today's conversation on family life covers some pretty sensitive, but really important subjects that may not be suitable for younger ears. So just use some discretion when listening to this next broadcast.
Hey, and let me add this. And if you do listen with your kids, talk about it after with them.
Right. This is an important conversation to have with maybe older kids, just depending on what you're thinking. But we just wanted to give you a heads up.
No matter where I started, I just kept coming back to reading stories about Jesus. I was growing uncomfortable because I'm like, well, I can't be interested in Jesus as a character. I'm an atheist. I want to marry a woman someday. Like, this just doesn't work. But I was also like, this is a really good deal. I should take the deal.
Welcome to Family Life Today, where we want to help you pursue the relationships that matter most. I'm Ann Wilson.
And I'm Dave Wilson, and you can find us at familylifetoday.com. This is Family Life Today. What are you excited about today?
I am excited. Yeah. I think that parents are dealing with things that we didn't really have to deal with, and that is the LGBTQ topic.
Raising your kids.
Yeah.
So we got Rachel Gilson with us.
Your story's pretty extraordinary to me. When I've heard it, I'm like, man, this is so powerful. So we're wondering if you would go back and give us a little part of your upbringing and how you came to know Jesus.
Give us the Rachel Gilson memoir.
I would be happy to. So I grew up in Southern California. I was raised by my mom and dad, neither of whom had a deep Christian background. So my parents just didn't bring us to church because it wasn't part of their background. So it wasn't going to be a part of the way they raised their kids.
Like never, not even Christmas or
Easter? Not even Christmas and Easter.
Wow. Did you have any concept of God or Jesus?
So I knew at Christmas time you sang about Frosty and Rudolph and like baby Jesus came up sometimes. So when I was going into high school, my grandfather bribed me into reading a bunch of books. My grandfather was also not a Christian. So I don't even remember a lot of the books. Robinson Crusoe was one of them. And one of them was a paperback book that had been really popular in the 50s, I think. It was called The Robe. It was a historical fiction book about one of the soldiers who had been at the cross when Jesus died.
They made a movie of it, didn't they?
Did they? I don't know.
I'm pretty sure they did.
I think they did.
Yeah.
So I had to read this book. And so I remember that was my first time thinking about Jesus from my non-believing grandfather. It was so funny. And so at that point, I was like, hey, this is kind of an interesting story. And I know that several of my peers go to church. Like, I kind of knew that background. And so I thought, oh, well, I'll ask these other 14-year-olds, you know, what do they know about Christianity, about Jesus? And I think maybe the questions I asked them probably weren't well-framed, or maybe they were a little intimidating. Maybe I came on too strong, but I remember thinking that the answers my peers gave me weren't particularly interesting or impressive. And so I, over time, as I was asking more questions about big ideas and bigger things, I was like, oh, maybe faith is for people who don't want to think for themselves, or a little lazy, or a little stupid. The further I got into high school, the more prejudiced intellectually I became against faith.
I'm guessing you're a pretty smart student.
I'm really only good at reading and writing. So that means...
But you're a really good thinker, so...
But if you get into Yale...
It just means
better.
You're really good at high school. I'm not sure what else it means besides that. You can meet a lot of Yale students who don't know how to do very basic things. So.
Seriously? Yale?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, we just had lunch with you. You're a lot more than the basic. Anyway.
I was very interested in big ideas. I did want to know what was true. And two of my closest teachers in high school were atheists, and I respected them intellectually. I thought they really had something, and so I was drawn to that aspect of the life of the mind. And I thought, well, once I go off to university, I'm finally going to get to really explore big ideas. Because I can do reading here now, but I was in a literal, like, cow town. Like, my high school had a working farm.
Oh.
And there was because California, you think like Los Angeles, but I grew up in rural California. Mm. There was actually a place at my high school where you could tie up your horse.
Really?
Now, no one had used it for a few years, but there were a lot of ranchers' kids who went to the high school. So, you know.
Yeah.
Wow.
take care of the cows.
You're not talking about downtown LA or Hollywood.
No, yeah. Not at all. We had like a back parking lot at school that was unpaved kind of thing. You know, like,
wow.
That kind of vibe. So I thought, oh, I need to get out of this town. The other thing that happened in high school, that was like my intellectual development. The other thing that happened in high school was that I realized the way that my female friends felt about young men was actually how I felt about other young women. And this took a little time to emerge. Mm. So one of the narratives that's popular around same-sex attraction is that often people who experience same-sex attraction will know very young. And that is actually true for many males. Mm. It's not a surprise, right? Male sexuality and female sexuality are different. And for men who experience predominantly same-sex attraction, even when they're little, they can often tell something is different. They might not have the words for it. But for female sexuality, that's often not the case. Hmm. So it's just one of these differences. So it wasn't like as a child, I noticed attraction to my female playmates or anything like this. I was just sort of a standard tomboy in a way. And I'd try to have boyfriends, like early in high school. I was like, oh, this is what my friends are doing, you know, and this guy asked me out. And I liked him because I enjoy the company of men. But, you know, the actual dating him and beginning to have sexual experience with him, because again, I didn't have a church background and there was like no
moral code
in my house. Yeah, that just wasn't happening. And I remember thinking, well, this is a little awkward. Mm. But then I thought, well, maybe it's just something you need to grow into. You know, like I've heard people say, sometimes you don't like certain foods, you just got to keep eating them. Or maybe you don't like certain types of drinks, but you keep drinking them and you kind of grow in your taste. I'm like, maybe you just kind of need to have more sexual experience with guys and then it'll kind of grow on you. So I was like, okay, you just got to grit your teeth and bear it maybe. I don't know. But then during my sophomore year, and I don't have to linger long on this, but my first romantic and sexual experience with another young woman, I was like, oh, this is what all the songs are about. Mm-hmm. This is what all the movies are about. This is what my friends are talking about, the way that the boys make them feel. This is how I'm feeling now. It was a little like attempting to have romantic and sexual relationships with guys was like putting on a pair of pants that like technically fit your body, but are not comfortable at all. You're like waiting to take them off. You can't really sit in them. You can't really walk in them. Whereas having romantic and sexual relationships with other young women felt like that perfect pair of pants that like look really classy, but are also super comfortable. You can do, I was like, this is where I want to live my life.
And it's interesting, like some of our listeners who don't know your name, who don't know anything, they might be thinking, wait, what's happened to family life today?
Yeah, that's right.
What are they doing? Right. I just want you to know, like, Rachel's married and has a child.
That's right. This so is I just teenage want, keep, me.
Yes, keep
long
listening.
Ago,
keep
long
listening
ago.
Because this is a pretty incredible story.
Yeah, that's right. No, this was 15, 16, 17 year old me.
Yeah.
And it was 2001, 2002, you know, this is back when Will and Grace was still edgy, not nostalgic.
Yeah, and people weren't talking about it.
People
it was
were
a
not
different
talking
day.
About it. It was before any state in America had legalized same-sex marriage. It was just a totally different culture. You know, now when it's Pride Month, it's like every corporation puts a rainbow flag on their door. There was no Pride Month like that during this time. And so I don't know. It would have been really different if I had been born in 2005 instead of 1985. Mm. Culturally, it would have made a huge impact. But at this point, I was like, okay, well, I know how I feel in these relationships. And everything in my culture had taught me, in order to be your true self, you have to do what you feel.
Mm. You probably thought, this is who I am.
This is who I am, or at least who I can become once I get out of the cowtown.
Yeah.
So the other thing that's really interesting to me as I reflect on my high school experience is that I had never been mistreated by a Christian or by a church group because of my sexual relationships. Mm. No one had ever treated me poorly. And yet, I sort of understood in my mind that Christianity was against my sexuality. I got that even apart from personal experience. I just sort of absorbed it from the ether. Like, oh, not only are Christians people who don't want to think for themselves, but they're also bigots. Mm. Like, I just had a strong anti-Christian framework when I went off to college. So much so that I think if my 17-year-old self saw my life now and what I do now, she would I'm not sure she'd believe it or she'd be horrified. Like it would be very, very different.
Yeah.
I mean, this is wild. So when you were leaving high school, that's where you were.
Yeah,
and absolutely. Now we're sitting here with a woman that's a Christian apologist and author and married and
it's
mother.
Very different.
It's like something happened.
Yeah, Jesus happened.
Yeah, what happened? How?
So I got tricked into moving to New England.
Tricked.
Yeah. So the thing about the advertising for Yale University is all the pictures are taken in October.
It's so true.
You know, when the light is golden and the leaves are red and orange and you think, oh, wouldn't it be great to study under those trees? And it's all a lie. You know, the campus looks like that for like 10 days.
But the summers and spring.
First of all, spring doesn't exist in New England. I challenge you to find it. You watch these early Red Sox games,
winter.
Everyone's wearing a parka.
Yeah.
But Michigan's like that too, but we still call it spring.
Well,
it just doesn't
to,
hit
because,
till
you know,
the end
emotionally,
May.
You have to call it something. It needs to be different than winter. Yeah.
Hey, before we continue our conversation, I just want to remind our listeners that our vision at Family Life is every home a godly home, and we need your help to get there. When you become a Family Life partner, your monthly support makes that vision actually possible.
And listen to this. If you join the Family Life Partner Program, you'll get access to exclusive updates and events and the chance to join our partners only online community. But more than that, you'll be teaming up with us to change the future of families. So the question is, will you stand with us?
You can learn more and become a partner at familylifetoday.com. Just click the donate button at the top. And again, that's familylifetoday.com. Okay, let's get back to the conversation.
So I was excited to go off to this world-class university. I thought, finally, I'm going to be able to live into my intellectual identity. Finally, I'm going to be able to live into my sexual identity that I want to embrace.
Did your parents know?
My mom knew. My dad had moved out at the beginning of high school, and he didn't know. So I accidentally found out that my dad had never known until I published an article in Christianity Today in 2017. Because I'd had these relationships with young women, and then I came to Christ and no longer had those relationships. And so my dad just sort of missed the boat.
Oops.
I felt bad about that one.
Yeah, I bet.
I mean, was it something even in high school that was sort of hidden, or did your classmates know?
Well, my classmates sort of knew. It was very different. You know, it was like I wasn't necessarily hiding it. I would never have say I was closeted.
Yeah.
But there wasn't even really anyone. My high school didn't have like a gay straight alliance club. It was sort of like, who cares to even tell? Like, there's not really a lot going on. So I just thought, once I go off to Yale, I'll just find more people like me. And I was dating this girl who I functionally worshiped, like that kind of fear and love that you should only give to God. Like I really worshiped her. So I thought, I'm awesome and I've got this awesome girlfriend in my life. I'm going to build on this foundation. It's going to be great. If I pull on my rural background a little bit, it's like God took his truck and took the chains out and wrapped him around those pillars I built my life on and just drove and pulled the pillars right out from underneath me.
So you get to Yale. Does it feel like, this is it?
Yeah, it feels like this is it. And oops, I was unprepared. It felt like everyone at school was smarter than me. They went to these fancy high schools. They were ready. And I'd built my identity being on one of the smartest people in the room. And suddenly I was like, maybe the stupidest person in the room. So that pillar just crumbled. Yeah. Bad news for me. And then the other thing that happened right after I got to school was that my girlfriend broke up with me. And you know, you may have had a teenage breakup. Mm-hmm. You know, they're traumatic. They hurt.
Yeah.
And I remember in the middle of that winter of my freshman year, sort of casting around for what am I going to, I was basically having an identity crisis. Like, what am I going to do? And I thought, oh, well, maybe I could write for the school newspaper, except it turned out you had to be smart to do that too. So I couldn't do that one. And then I thought, well, maybe I'll go to the gym more, you know, that'll be my personality. And then I remembered that I'm really lazy. And so I was like, well, shoot, I can't do that. And it never occurred to me to turn to Jesus. Like, Jesus in my mind was a cartoon character, you know, like some bumbling dude in a toga or something like this.
Yeah.
But I happened to be taking a course through Western philosophy. And one of our first lectures back in the quote unquote spring semester, it was actually winter the whole time, but you know, that's what they call it to make you feel better, was on a guy named René Descartes. You may have heard of him. He's the old dead French guy who coined the phrase,
yes.
I think, therefore I am. And I remember the lecturer was explaining how Descartes moved from that phrase, I think, therefore I am, to this whole proof for the existence of God, because Descartes was a Catholic, so, you know, he was philosophically working on his system. And I remember sitting in the lecture thinking, that's a pretty stupid proof for the existence of God. Like, I wasn't very impressed by it. But I was curious about it because I'd never heard that proof before. I was familiar with a couple of them that I thought were sort of weak, but that sparked in me this question of like, maybe there are proofs for God's existence that I'm not aware of. And that interested me. And I thought maybe there's something I need to know about. Now, I didn't actually want to ask another human being about it because I considered Christianity and faith in God in general just below me. Huh. So what do you do when you have a vulnerable but private question? You ask the internet, you know.
You Google it.
That's what you do.
Which they probably didn't have Google. Did they have
Google?
No,
they did.
They did.
This was 2004, you know, so it was when people had laptops, but they were really so big you couldn't carry them around. Like I had a Dell that I needed both my arms to like get the top lid open, you know. So I'd pop that thing open and just start typing random religious search terms into Google. I would slam it closed if any of my roommates or friends came in. Like you're a kid caught looking at something inappropriate on the family computer.
Yeah.
Like, well, I'm just doing my...
It's about Jesus.
Yeah, you know, pretending to do my French homework. I was never doing my French homework. And my grade reflects that. So, you know, when you're reading something online and you start in one place and you just kind of follow hyperlinks, you know, you're reading about March Madness or whatever. And then suddenly you're reading about like the Kingdom of Finland. And you're like, how did I even get here? You know, it's like crazy trails. And no matter where I started, I just kept coming back to reading stories about Jesus. And again, I thought of him kind of like this cartoon. But the Jesus I was reading about was really interesting. There was a Jesus who was tender, like a careful, caring guy, but also really intellectually interesting. Some of my favorite stories were when his obvious opponents were trying to come up to him to like trick him and he would just shut them down. You know,
yeah.
I was like, oh, that's cool right there. But I was growing uncomfortable because I'm like, well, I can't be interested in Jesus as a character. I'm an atheist. I want to marry a woman someday. Like, this just doesn't work. The only two people I knew at Yale who identified as Christians were these two young women who were dating each other. I met them in the marching band, and they had an illegal cat, which I thought was really cool. And one of these women was, I knew her plan vocationally was to become a Christian minister. Mm. And so I thought, okay, well, these are like varsity level Christians, you know, like when you go into it professionally, that's the real deal. So I thought, well, maybe I should ask them about this. So I went to them all nervous. I was like, so in my mind, these things do not go together, but clearly for you, they do seem to go together. Can you tell me how you got there? And they were like, oh yeah, it's all been a huge mistake, you know, misinterpretation. The Bible actually affirms monogamous gay relationships, but it's been wrongly interpreted. And I remember thinking, okay, that sounds very interesting. And they gave me this packet. I really wish I still had this packet today, you know?
Yeah.
But they gave me this packet explaining the quote-unquote correct way to interpret the Bible. And I remember, you know, I love a packet. So I was taking it back to my room and I was flipping through it. And I remember thinking, okay, this makes a lot of sense. There's like an internal consistency here. I understand what they're doing. But I was also studying to be a history major. And so I knew, well, you shouldn't just look at interpretations. You should look at the original documents.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's not like I had a bunch of papyrus under my desk. But I had the internet. And so I was pulling up the Bible verses that the packet was claiming to interpret. And over again, I mean, I wasn't a Bible scholar, but I knew how to read and write. And so I was like, I don't think these interpretations are very good. I remember thinking at one point, I'm not sure that David has a man problem. He really seems to have a woman problem in the text, you know, things like this. So eventually I was like, I don't buy any of this. The Bible clearly says no to
just
these
from
relationships.
What you read.
Just from what I was following their packet back to the Bible. And I was like, I don't, this seems like wishful thinking to me. Like, these girls are really sweet. but I can't follow them here. I think they're deluding themselves. So I remember kind of being frustrated. Like, I felt stupid for even being interested.
Yeah.
And for thinking maybe that this packet held something for me. I remember throwing it in my cheap dorm room trash can, and the trash can like fell over because the was not so substantial much. Enough to handle a packet of paper. I remember thinking, you need to cut this stuff out. Like, do your homework, you know, stop thinking about this distraction. Well, a little while after that, I happened to be in the room of one of my friends. She was like a friendly acquaintance. We weren't close. And she was a non-practicing Catholic. And so I remember I was standing in her doorway one day. She was deeper in her room, like putting something in a bag because we were going to take a walk somewhere. And she had a bookshelf next to her doorway. And one of my favorite hobbies is looking at people's bookshelves and judging them. Which is, well, you know, you can tell a lot about someone by what shows up on their bookshelf.
I mean, you asked us at lunch, what are you reading?
I like to know.
And did you respect her bookshelf?
I don't remember anything about her bookshelf except that there was one book on there that said Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis. And see, I wasn't raised on Narnia, so I didn't know to make the yummy noise, right? You know, but the title of the book, Mere, I was like, of course I should be reading a book and not just the internet. But again, I was embarrassed by my interest and I didn't want to ask her to borrow the book. She surely would have lent it. I just didn't want her to know.
Yeah.
So I just stole the book. She wasn't looking.
You stole the book.
It's not big. You
know. We
know.
We have
and,
it.
Yeah. It slipped right into my bag. No problem. And again, I had no moral compass. So what did I care?
That is such a God thing right there. That one, you check out her books. But even the fact that of the books, you would see Mere Christianity.
It's interesting to me, too, when I think about, I don't think she was walking with Jesus.
Yeah.
So who even knows who gave her that book
right.
or how she came to own it?
It's put there for you.
Oh, I can't wait to hear what you thought of it. Did you take it back home and start reading?
So I would read it at different points when I should have been doing my homework. And there was this one day where I had sort of an awkward period of time between my classes. Like, it was not enough time to go home and rest, but too much time to go to the next class. And it was cold outside because it was February. So I was sitting in one of Yale's libraries, kind of kicking my feet up, just waiting and passing time by reading Mere Christianity. And I don't actually remember what chapter I was in, what paragraph, sentence, anything like that. All I remember is that there was that day when I was reading the book and suddenly I was overwhelmed with the reality that God does exist.
Mm-hmm.
And not like some store brand God or Zeus or something like this, but the God who made everything, and the God who is perfect.
Mm.
And I knew that that meant he made me and that I was going to have to give an account.
Mm.
And I'd met me. It wasn't great news. You know, it's like, I'm a liar. I'm arrogant. I'm unkind. I cheat on things. I'm sexually immoral. I'm reading a stolen book. You know, it's pretty clear all the chips were going to get pushed into the guilty category. So really, God confronted me with the bad news first. But really quickly with that, I also, for the first time, understood that part of the reason Jesus had come was to place himself as a barrier between God's wrath and me.
Mm-hmm.
So that the only way to be safe was to run towards Jesus, not away from Jesus. And I remember my first thoughts being, I don't want to become a Christian. Christians are really lame. But I was also like, this is a really good deal. I should take the deal. So I didn't have like a nice pastor or campus minister with me, but I kind of knew I needed to pray. So I closed my eyes and I was like, okay, fine. I'll become a Christian. And then I just went to class, you know? What was there?
That's your salvation prayer right there.
Really? They're not always elegant.
Yeah.
But it's interesting,
but
even.
It was real. It was.
Yeah.
And you're faced
honest.
With your sin.
I was cornered.
Yeah.
There was clearly no, I wasn't going to be able to dig myself out of that hole. But Jesus had thrown me a ladder.
This has been a great conversation with Rachel Gilson, really about her story. And she has a book called Born Again This Way, Coming Out, Coming to Faith, and What Comes Next. And you can find her book in the link in the show notes at familylifetoday.com.
And we're going to continue our conversation with Rachel tomorrow.
Family Life Today is a donor-supported production of Family Life, a Crew ministry, helping you pursue the relationships that matter most.